The Bantu of Somalia are a long way from home. Originally from Central and Southern Africa, they were captured 2 centuries ago and sold as slaves in Somalia. Generations later, the Somali Bantu remained second-class citizens.
In Somalia, there was no opportunity to do anything but work on farms. We had to give up our crops against our will. We didn't get to sell them. We never left farms and went to towns because there was nothing for us.
When Somalia collapsed into civil war in 1991, Abdi Kadir Ali and thousands of other Bantu fled to neighboring Kenya. Now, after a decade in refugee camps there, the Bantu are making their longest journey yet, across the ocean to America. The decision to bring the Bantu here was controversial. The State Department agreed only after efforts to settle them within Africa failed. Even some refugee advocates worried. The Bantu are farmers, largely illiterate, with virtually no knowledge of Western culture. Was it right to throw them into American society? More than 11,000 Somali Bantu have been settled across the United States so far. The effort to integrate them is demanding generosity, dedication, and creativity from whole communities.
How are y'all? How are you? Oh, it's so good to see you. Oh, you look so good.
Yes.
Look at your son.
In Columbia, South Carolina, Rukia Shago shows off her 6-day-old son in her boss's office. Co-workers coo over tiny Abukar, swaddled in his car seat, eyes shut tight.
We get lots of hair.
Look at all this hair.
22 Bantu families now live in Columbia. Rukia was among the first to arrive a year ago. She's been doing custodial work here at Columbia College. She's weary, but pleased at the attention.
This first America, last America, baby.
America, baby.
No more baby.
Standing back from the crowd is Rukia's host here, Francie Markham.
Did she tell you when she called you on the phone that he arrived 9 minutes after we got to the hospital?
No!
Oh my gosh.
She beams like a proud grandma. Rukia calls Francie her American mother. She was there when Rukia, her husband, and then 3 young children walked off the plane from Africa. And she's been part of their lives every day since.
I'm going to put it back in this car seat because we're ready.
After everyone's held Abukar and hugged Rukia, Francie loads them back into her car and drives to the modest apartment complex where about half the Somali refugees
coming.
Have been placed.
It's too heavy right yet. We need to give you a little bit of time. Without the carrier, you can carry him because then he only weighs about 7 pounds.
Francie hauls the baby carrier up concrete steps to Rukia's front door. The living room has drab brown carpet and mismatched secondhand furniture. There are Islamic drawings on the walls. The Bantu are Muslim. And a small TV with wads of aluminum foil on its antenna. Rukia slumps on the couch, flipping through the first photos of Abukar. Rukia says when she learned she would come to the U.S., she considered the country paradise. But there have certainly been some disappointments. Take her delivery the week before.
In Africa, I was told that when you deliver a baby in America, you don't feel pain. I thought I would wake up and my child would just be lying there beside me. But it hurt just as much as before.
Francie Markham says she had an elaborate plan to get Rukia to the hospital with a translator. But when Rukia went into labor, she didn't tell anyone until hours later.
Therein lies why we only had 9 minutes when we arrived at the hospital for her to have the baby. The baby came instantaneously.
So much for the epidural that had been touted in the refugee camp.
Hello.
2 more volunteers drop in at Rukia's apartment.
And my name is Carl Cox, and I'm on the Somali Bantu resettlement team at Church, Trinity Road Methodist Church as well, and just kind of do volunteer work.
And I'm Kate Swanson. I'm another volunteer from Trinity Road United Methodist Church.
Kate helps teach the family English. Carl's been spending Saturday mornings with Rukia's 8-year-old son, Mohamud, teaching him to ride a bike.
Have any of you ever done this kind of refugee work before?
No.
I had just been to Africa. I mean, I've done mission work in Zimbabwe, 2 different trips, and one of the trips involved teaching, literally in a high school in Mutare, Zimbabwe.
So why did you all get involved in this?
To me, it just seemed like these people, from their situation, the background, they have a great need for us to step in and help them. And knowing their situation and background, me as a person, I really couldn't turn my back on that. I've got a lot that I can offer them and help them have a better life.
Carl, Kate, and Francie found out about the Bantu through their church, Trenum Road United Methodist. 42 Columbia churches are sponsoring Bantu families. More than 300 people are volunteer hosts. The whole effort is coordinated by Lutheran Family Services. But Francie Markham is quick to rule out any effort to proselytize.
We have a written policy that says that proselytizing is not a piece of this work. I will not be about trying to convert these people because they already have their own faith.
Francie says she and the other volunteers thought they'd prepared well for the Bantu's needs. They took lessons in the Somali language. They knew they'd have to explain basics like electricity, indoor plumbing, even how to use a doorknob. But there have been some issues they never imagined.
I even think about an initial funny episode that happened where a family came and people had left a lot of bananas in the kitchen. They came the next morning and the bananas were gone. So they thought, oh my goodness, there must have been a party or, you know, what happened to the bananas? They had hidden the bananas in their laundry basket because they had had to hide their food from time to time in the refugee camp. And so it had to become an issue of understanding that the locked door would protect your food. And that's a complicated idea.
The Bantu also prepared for their new life. Back in the refugee camps, they studied English. They sat in classes on American culture and mentality. Abdul Qadir Muhammad was the first Somali Bantu to arrive here in Colombia. He's among the most educated of the group, and he conducted a lot of those camp lessons. He says there was an overriding theme.
Whenever you come over to America, make sure you work hard. This is what they were being, you know, just told when they were at the kindergartens in the refugee camp, because the teachers were being trained to teach the children American culture. So then they made us a song, because the children can't simply read what's on the board. So they changed now the lesson into a song in order for the children to understand what they are saying. So once they come home, the parents will also understand that simply because their students or their children are singing what we taught them.
Rukia's son and two friends sing us one of the songs they learned.
Benaya si America, si mesa el wasto.
America is a land of opportunity, it goes. We'll learn what the American children are doing. We'll do everything on the computer. Our parents are good, the song goes on, because they helped us get to the USA, and we give the government of America a high five.
Mother.
Ave.
Daughter.
Gurte.
In America, Abdul Qadir Muhammad is still teaching these refugees.
Okay. Granddaughter.
Six women at a folding table shout answers, laughing as they rearrange brightly colored headscarves. This apartment is in the same complex where Rukia lives, and it's used full time for training. There are English and literacy classes. Most Bantu can't read or write their own language, let alone English. There's also health education.
You guys ready to get started?
Yes,
yes. Okay. Do you remember what did you guys talk about last week? Who was here last week?
Tonight's subject is sickle cell anemia. There have been classes on personal hygiene, the dangers of herbal remedies, several on family planning. There was also a class on mental illness, but that's a cultural taboo, so the instructor called it What to Expect When Life Changes.
First, I'm going to take roll, okay? So I need to make sure I check off everyone who's here.
The health classes and the rest of the resettlement effort are coordinated by Lutheran Family Services. Administrator Hannah Foe is a refugee herself from Sierra Leone, and she's had her worries about how well the Bantu would adjust. But Foe feels a lot better after going to a national conference of refugee workers.
And one of the topics of discussions was the Somali Bantu's special needs population. And from that discussion, I just realized that we're not the worst for it in Colombia, really. From what I heard, the other side resettling Bantus, I mean, some of them think it's the lost cause. Honestly, I was forced to get up and say, hang in there, it's not all that gloom, you're gonna get there. And I think ours is just a success story from what I heard, you know, in comparison.
Fo says some agencies were frustrated there are so many single mothers among the refugees. That's partly because polygamy isn't legal in the U.S. Second and third wives have been split from their husbands. Others also found the Bantu had trouble holding a job. But in Colombia, Fo says it's not been a problem. A local shelter for homeless children takes in Bantu kids while their moms work. South Carolina's Department of Motor Vehicles allows Somali refugees to take the written part of the driver's test orally. That helps them get to work. Ironically, there had been local opposition to the Somali Bantu. Hannah Fo says the refugees were supposed to have gone to the neighboring town of Casey, but in 2003, city officials there said no, it would strain schools and social services.
I think it was a blessing in disguise in that we had a lot of people rally around the cause. A lot of people said, no, this could be done. This is not fair. And we are going to make sure that this, you know, this becomes a success. You may not believe this, but up till now, 1 year after some Bantus have arrived, we still have sponsors taking them to work. We still have sponsors taking them to doctor's appointments.
How long do you envision the sponsors being involved in the lives of the refugee families?
You know what? The Bantus have been here for, a lot of them have been here for about a year now. And we still have some sponsors who are so close to the Bantus that they don't even want to stop, you know, sponsoring them. One sponsor was actually telling me that we don't want this boy to go to that school. We want him to go to this private school. Yes. He said, I think he's going to be the next president of the United States. And I told her, I said, well, you have to lobby for the Constitution to be changed. She just loves that boy to death.
I am a retired teacher, and my son goes to school, and my husband is a physician. So as much as can be in the daytime, I do that. It still has greatly affected my family.
Francie Markham, host to Rukia's family.
And I am constantly struggling in how to manage all of this. I have to be here at night for various meetings. Tomorrow night is a party. I'll be here for the party. I'll go from the party to my son's baseball game. So it's just a question of how can I remember that I have loyalties in a lot of places.
Assalamu alaikum. Hiya wa rahma.
Across town, Garane Garane also spends hours each week checking up on Somali Bantu. He used to work for Lutheran Family Services, but now volunteers independently. Garane is Somali, though not Bantu. This family just arrived 2 weeks earlier. A toddler and two young girls crouch behind a chair, peeking out to flirt with Garane. This was their first day at school.
Tonight we have to go through how to wash underwear, and how to, the kids, they have to be ready, go to bed at 8. All this family now is no. When I call, they say, Garane is calling, go to bed.
So bedtime.
Bedtime, it's very hard to convince kids. The kids, because we didn't have all that in the camp. They were born in camps where there's nothing. So you can wake up at 11 or 12 or 2 o'clock. It doesn't matter. You know, it's... But here, it doesn't. Some kids were sleeping at school, so.
You're gonna ask how school went?
Yeah, school kurma. It was good.
The list of new concepts to explain is daunting: toilet paper, underwear, socks, not to mention rent, a checking account, whom to trust or not. It will be a long haul for the parents and grandparents in this group, but it's striking to watch the children. They may be just days out of the refugee camp, but before long, they'll know only America.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13.
We don't have a history in Somalia, and there is nothing to learn from it except bad things.
Abdi Kadir Ali is Rukia's husband, the father of four, including newborn Abukar. It's just fine with him if his children forget all about Somalia.
I don't ever want to take my children to Somalia and say, this belongs to you and that belongs to you, because there is nothing there for us.
Abdi is 27, with a small frame and quick smile. When he walked off the plane from Africa a year ago, he told volunteers he wanted to work at a hotel. Now here he is at the embassy suites, sorting clean dishes and unloading garbage. 1 year on, what struck Abdi most about America? The amazing sense of security, he says. And what's been the hardest? The high cost of living. When refugees arrive in the U.S., they receive an array of federal and state subsidies, but those disappear, usually within 6 months.
The life in the U.S. is very good, if you work for it.
Across the country, thousands of Somali Bantu and thousands of Americans are working hard to make life good for these newest arrivals.
Teacher of the mother, I go home to see my mother. My mother's in a lie. Goodbye, Barada, I go home.
Our story was produced by Petra Mayer and recorded by Flawn Williams. You can see photos of South Carolina's Somali Bantu and hear them describe their first impressions of the U.S. at npr.org.
Bye bye, teacher, teacher of the murder. I go home to see my mother. My mother did a lie. Goodbye, but I.
You're listening to All Things Considered.